This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about California's three strikes criminal justice system. My guests are pretty significant people in terms of their background and knowledge about this. Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman. Daniel Russo, who is a certified specialist in criminal law. He's a defense attorney. He's a partner in the Solano County law firm of Morton and Russo. He's a member of the Criminal Law Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. And the third person is also someone very significant, San Mateo County District Attorney James Fox. He's the former president of the National District Attorneys Association. And last but not least, he's my boss. So I have to be nice to him. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies the following fields of law: criminal law, admiralty and maritime law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, legal malpractice law, taxation law, and workers' compensation law. Additional funding is provided by the family law section of the State Bar and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Very nice to have you here. Jim, if you would do this for us, could you kind of do a little summary of what the three strikes law is and some of maybe your background as this was being considered in either 1993 or 1994?
Yes, I was the chair of the California District Attorneys Association Legislative Committee. And so when this legislation, which was it was originally proposed as legislation, was first presented to our committee, the members, who were all experienced prosecutors, had grave concerns about some of the issues that we saw with the legislation. Ultimately, the legislative committee recommended that we oppose the legislation. The matter went before the board of directors of the association, and there were only three votes of board members to oppose it. The balance voted to stay neutral because it was recognized that there were significant issues with the way that legislation had been drafted. Ultimately, the legislation wended its way through the state legislature. I actually appeared in my capacity as the district attorney of San Mateo County before the legislative committees to testify in opposition. And the opposition that I felt justified my position was that the three strikes law provided for absolutely no discretion for prosecutors or for judges. It mandated that every defendant who qualified as a three strikes defendant must be charged as a three strike defendant, regardless of the nature of the new offense, whether it was serious or violent. And I felt that that was inappropriate. I felt that district attorneys should have discretion as to whether or not to pursue the case as a three-strike defendant. But more importantly, I did not believe that our criminal justice system would best be served by putting prosecutors in absolute control of sentencing. Silly me, I think that there is a role for judges. Mm-hmm. And so when the California Supreme Court in 1996 came down with the Romero decision, which said that, in fact, judges do have the power to strike prior allegations, that solved a number of problems from my perspective. And I do recognize that it has not been implemented the same throughout the state, and that is a cause for concern. But the basic premise of the three strikes law is that any person who has twice been convicted of a serious or violent offense and commits any new felony, they are subjected to a penalty of 25 years to life, and they must serve 80% of the minimum term.
Which is 25.
They have to serve basically 20 years.
Yes.
If the person has only one qualifying prior, then they are considered what is called a two-striker, and they have to serve a double term. So if a defendant commits a felony that could be punished by 16 months, 2 years, or 3 years, the court would have discretion to sentence to 32 months, 4 years, or 6 years. But, of course, now after Romero, the court could strike the prior conviction.
Mm-hmm. Judge Hyman, you went to New Zealand to lecture there, and you wrote an article about the three strikes law because apparently New Zealand, its legislature is considering adopting a three strikes model. Tell us some of the things. You wrote your article You've been a judge for about 20 years in Santa Clara County. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, they actually did pass law in New Zealand, which is not the same as ours, and it actually is a more liberal version of it. But it still, I believe, has problems. One of the problems I have is that we're all looking for quick fixes. And rather than putting the responsibility on people to rehabilitate defendants, our quick fix is to go ahead and up the ante. Rather than grading in terms of how probation or how the Department of Corrections rehabilitates people, those failures of rehabilitation are placed on always on the defendant or on the courts for being lenient or something of that nature, with the end result that there's criticism and the legislature reacts more and more with minimums and other kinds of sentencing reform. One of the biggest problems that I have with the current three strikes legislation is the expression politics is local is to say that there's 58 counties in California, and there's potentially 58 different ways of doing business. Mr. Fox is in an adjoining county to myself, and there's therefore no reason for me to try and kiss up to him. But I'll say this, he's retiring. He's a fair prosecutor, and his policies, I believe, to be fair. Not every chief prosecutor has his viewpoints and has his intent in terms of trying to look at making a system fair, making a system work. And depending upon what county you're in, some prosecutors, chief prosecutors, are draconian in terms of how they use three strikes. And while Mr. Fox is correct that the judges have the opportunity to strike strikes, a judge can only strike a strike based upon a motion after the case is settled. A judge may not, cannot, tell a defendant up front that the judge is going to strike a strike. That's against the law. Now, some judges give a wink or something of that nature because defense attorneys are always trying to get a commitment from the court in terms of whether or not there'll be striking of strikes. Some judges, as I said, don't follow the law explicitly. I do. To the extent that I might not, it would be suggesting to someone that based upon the information I have, there's no way that that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Based upon the fact that the person was on parole when it happened or multiple offenses over, you know, I mean, I think it's incumbent upon me to not give false hope. But on the other hand, if there's a shot, the best I'm willing to say is that I have an open mind. But to give a wink, I'm not willing to do it. Mm-hmm. And there are judges that are. You know, one of the other problems is that in terms of locale is that you always want both the prosecutors and the defense attorneys, if you're a judge, to know what you're thinking and how you operate. I think fairness requires that they have a good book on you as a judge in terms of what you're probably going to do in certain circumstances, just to help them settle cases and to help them assist them in deciding whether or not they want to appear in front of you. Because under California law, each side, whether it's criminal, civil, or otherwise, they have a right of a challenge to get another judge. You know, it's judge shopping, but it's legal. Mr. Fox's office has always used that judiciously and respectfully. That is not the case in every county where sometimes public defenders or defense attorneys or prosecutors put a judge basically out of business because they're not happy with how that person
challenging them.
Right.
Judge, let me do this, if I may. Listeners who listen to the program live in the Bay Area and on the internet at www.klw.org, I want you to know that you'll be able to call in the second half hour of the program. Right now, we're in the first half hour of the program, and we do record this. We send it out to a number of other stations, and so we're going to do, in this first half hour, some of the very basic things about the three strikes law. And so let me throw this to you, if I can, Dan Russo. Much of the criticism of the three strikes law has been that you take someone who has two strikes, maybe robbery, maybe burglary, whatever it may be, two strikes, two convictions, two strikes, and the person goes into a place like Walmart and steals whatever it may be, something that's maybe not more than 20 bucks. And that person can be prosecuted under the three strikes law. Is that right?
Well, I have to be...
Come closer to the mic, if you will.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I have to be honest. I feel three strikes is really a fraud on the public in California. And I think because I think the judge and Mr. Fox put it really well, is no one is really talking about the real issues. And the real issues is a correctional system that sucks down $10 billion. And I'm not pulling these figures out of my hat. This is what they euphemistically call it, the corrections moving forward, what they publish themselves.
Department of Corrections moving forward.
Right.
Okay.
And their budget is $9.5 billion. So the problem is rehabilitation on every level. And the problem is the lack of will on politicians. The problem with three strikes is three strikes require a politically elected district attorney and a judge who can be pulled off the bench in a contested election by looking at being soft on crime. And in my experience, of course, I have a limited experience, although I practice in all the counties in the Bay Area, I have seen some really grotesque, you know, kind of Les Miserables situations develop where people are charged with three strikes with very, very petty offenses and with their past prior strikes, because people have to understand there's no washout period. So you could be a solid citizen. You could commit two strikes, be a solid citizen for 35 years, and then commit this new drug or a theft violation and have a life sentence. And so my problem is that three strikes is looked upon as some way by politicians and the public to solve a problem, to get rid of the most dangerous people.
Get them off the street.
Right.
Right.
Which is, you know, we all have to deal with. There's some people who can't be with everyone else. The problem is that you have to depend on goodwill on all the parties, and you're not going to get that. And so I recently did a case I was trying to strike a second strike, and the judge, who's a well-respected judge in my county, in Solano County, he's been on the bench 25 years, and that was, he granted my motion. And he announced to the court that was the first time he'd ever struck a strike. So if you go to particular courts and if you have particular defendants, you get these grotesque results. And the problem with three strikes, and I think, and Jim spoke saying that he opposed three strikes, but it got better with Romero. Well, my position is it got better in theory, not in practice.
Do you agree with that, Jim, or not?
Well, I obviously am most familiar with the practice in our own county. And I will tell you that in 1983, when I began as the elected district attorney, our office had three full-time prosecutors funded by a state grant in a unit called the Career Criminal Unit. And in order for cases to qualify to be handled by those deputies, the defendants had to have extensive prior records. For the last 3 or 4 years, we have had no attorneys in the Career Criminal Unit because we're not seeing career criminals in San Mateo County anymore. Most of those people who were, as I jokingly said, doing life on the installment plan have in fact been prosecuted now as three-strike defendants, and they are not coming back into the community and victimizing people. Now, we do not, I don't think, abuse the three-strikes law. And in fact, last year, in a county of over 740,000 people, where we prosecute about 2,500 felonies a year, we sent probably six defendants total as three-strike defendants. We are not abusing the law. And frankly, for those counties where it is viewed that the district attorney is abusing his powers, frankly, that's why the Supreme Court gave judges the role to strike the priors. And if, in fact, it is believed that a district attorney is abusing his powers, we stand for election every 4 years.
Judge, what about this? What about the people, though, as I posed to Dan just a few minutes ago, someone who goes into the Walmart and he's got two strikes already and he steals a pair of socks, he tries to leave, they catch him, etc. Jim, he can be prosecuted under three strikes law, right?
Yes, he can.
Judge, you're not in favor of that, are you?
Well, it depends upon when those strikes were incurred. It depends upon...
Let's say they were 15 years ago.
All right. And has he been law-abiding for 15 years?
Let's say he has. As Dan was saying, some of these people have been law-abiding, and yet he goes into Walmart and he steals a pair of socks for $15 or whatever.
In most cases, he's not going to be prosecuted three strikes.
Do you agree with that, Jim?
Well,
on a statewide basis?
We've
got 400 people, I think, in the state prison who have had these petty theft situations, haven't we?
There is 161, between 161 and 170,000 people in the Department of Corrections. There are 41,000 in the Department of Corrections on second and third strikes. Of those, there are 400 inmates who are third strike inmates who are committed where the underlying offense is a petty theft. Now, that's just what the Department of Corrections says.
That petty theft means under $400.
That's right.
Okay.
But then there's a whole chunk of inmates in three strikes who are three strikes for simple possession of drugs. Okay. And so I don't disagree. You know, I feel kind of like Pangloss in the if this is the best of all possible worlds, if the district attorney uses their discretion and the judges understand their discretion and are willing to take a courageous position and exercise it. But that's leaving too much up to individuals. So my problem with three strikes is that if a district attorney is willing to abuse that law, and if a judge is unwilling to stake out a political position where they look soft on crime, then you get these grotesque results. And then even if you're just completely cynical, which I'm not, but if you were completely cynical, you'd say for those 400 guys doing three strikes on a petty theft, if they do the minimum amount of time, which is 20 years, we're going to pay something like $20 or $40 million to keep those
for for those 400 people
to keep them housed.
Mm-hmm.
We pay them. We could send them to Yale, which is a suggestion in my book, for $50,000 a year, and that's what it costs to keep an inmate.
Yeah.
So at some point, someone has to say, "Hey, look, we just can't keep on building a population in prisons, and we can't have laws drafted in such a way." And I hate to say this, that we depend on the goodwill of all involved because there is too much politics in it. And a judge who is a decent judge who wants to make a decision but who knows he's going to be up for election in a year and will have someone run against him saying that he's soft on crime, it adds a dimension to the law that's not written into the law.
I interrupted you, Judge, earlier.
I'm not trying to split babies here. I agree with both of my co-guests. I think one of the things that I've discovered since I'm in my last year, I've had my last election, I'm retiring at the end of the year, and it's an unbelievable freedom because I find myself, not just with respect to, I don't think that I've changed with respect to striking strikes or granting or denying Romero's, because I think I have granted them, but I certainly don't grant them easily. I follow what I believe to be the law. There certainly have been circumstances where people have received what I consider to be draconian results. I've indicated it on the record. I've invited the Court of Appeals to reverse me, and of course they never do. Whenever you ask them to reverse you, they never do. It's when you don't ask them to reverse you that they do.
They do. Right.
But one of the things that I have done recently is I've stated on the record what my feelings are in terms of whether or not justice has occurred. And a number of times in my county, and I said, Mr. Fox doesn't work in my county, there have been what I consider to be draconian results where they've gone the extra bit in terms of charging someone with three or four rocks possession for sale because the police officer is going to say...
Cocaine
rocks. Or meth or PCP or whatever. Or they've charged petty theft into a robbery because the person jerked away from the person who was trying to hold them, and under the case of Estes, they can charge that as a robbery. And they do. The charging has a tendency to be for the highest possible crime that there is. If there's been efforts at rehabilitation, if the person didn't take them, that's fine. But I really think that we default to punishment rather than to rehabilitation. We do not hold the people that are responsible for rehabilitation in terms of saying, well, why are the numbers so poor? Why do people violate parole to the extent of over 65%? There's no consequences for that. And our response is to have more and more minimum sentencing and to change consequences rather than saying, hey, look, are we really making the best efforts at rehabilitation? And if we are, and if the person isn't taking advantage of them and is mucking up, okay, fine. Hey, I've given sentences of 200 years, 450 years, things of that nature. And in many cases, they deserve it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I've given people some prison sentences that I think were disproportionate. But I did believe that I gave my reasons in terms of why I denied motions and things of that nature. And in those particular cases, the appellate court agreed with me. But I guess the other thing that I agree with defense counsel is that it really depends upon the goodwill of the people that in that particular county. And you've got 58 counties and almost 58 ways of doing things.
So what you're saying is, depending on what county you're in, if you are someone who has two strikes and you do this, which may be petty theft, depending on the county, you could be sentenced to 25 to life. If you're in San Mateo County and that happens, hopefully that would not be the situation.
Yeah, but I think that it's also important to realize that under our Constitution, our 58 counties are represented by elected district attorneys. The community is the people who put those district attorneys in office.
Yeah.
And the communities vary. Mm-hmm. We are not a homogenized state. So Kern County and San Francisco are quite disparate.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happens even with the death penalty.
Well, but there is a wild card. And that wild card is, and it hurts me. My dad was a union organizer, and so I don't like to speak negatively of unions because I think they represent the best that can be accomplished for working people. But the wild card is the Department of Corrections Union, which funds the victims movement, which funds particular legislators who are trying to increase sentencing, which sets up, there's a whole dynamic, and they're a wild card.
Mm-hmm.
So they will contribute money to ensure that sentences are lengthened. They will contribute money to so that the Department of Corrections has a monstrous budget.
Let me, if I may interrupt, because we're nearly at the end of the first half hour, which is the statewide version of the program. You mentioned, Dan, that there are 400 persons in there who had committed a petty theft. We're talking about stealing something, probably.
Less than $400.
Less than $400. Maybe, it's something that, if we were to see the statistics, I bet it's something that's probably even less than $100 on the average. But what do we do? What do we do with these 400 people who are there? That seems really incredibly unfair for somebody like that. Of course, we don't know what the strikes were, but it seems to have. Pardon?
When in time.
Right. It just seems inherently unfair that someone who has stolen something under $400 would be serving a 25 to life sentence, whereas if you were not a three striker, that wouldn't be the case at all.
Well, I think that it's important to realize, because we do have one defendant that I know of in the Department of Corrections who went to prison for 25 to life for stealing $20 worth of Pete's coffee.
Oh.
Now, that sounds probably outrageous. He showed good taste. However, he had also shown that he was completely incapable of modifying his life. His initial, he was not a three striker. He had seven strikes.
Ooh, yeah.
The first one was five counts of attempted first-degree murder, where he stood on a freeway overpass with a high-powered rifle shooting at cars. He went to prison, and he got out, because this was before three strikes was the law, and the before sentencing enhancements for use of firearms and attempted murders. When he got out, he was in a rehabilitation camp, got into an argument with somebody. The person went into their tent. He torched the tent, so he committed arson and mayhem. He also got out from prison shortly after that, and within 5 days, he was stealing Pete's coffee. We considered that person completely incapable of living in a safe society.
And I think we all agree on that character, right? But the problem is that, at least even according to Department of Corrections, 50% of the three and second strikers are in for a small amount of drugs or a petty theft. And so there's got to be some addressing the issue of how you're going to rehabilitate these people and what are you spending your money on. You know, if this was any other subject, people would be having nervous breakdowns over the fact that it costs us $50,000 a year to lock these idiots up.
It is right now about 27 minutes after 7 o'clock. This is 91.7 KALW, your local public radio station. If you would like to call in and speak to my guests, please do. I understand from Debbie Kennedy, who's our announcer operator, that some of you were calling before the program began. So now is your chance to call in. It's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. If you feel that the three strikes law is something that you want to see really used to put people away, we want to hear from you. If you're someone who feels it's been very unfair to someone who's in your family or you personally or someone you know, join us with your question, your comment, your concern. Let me tell you who we have here. Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman. And Judge Hyman suggested that we do this program to me probably a couple of months ago. He had gone to New Zealand, had on a particular lecture that he was doing to a group of lawyers over there and wrote an article in one of the New Zealand newspapers about the three strikes law because the legislature there was considering adopting a three strikes system as we have, or something similar to what we have here. My other guest, of course, is my boss, San Mateo County District Attorney James Fox. He is a former president of the National District Attorneys Association and is going to retire fairly soon, so he doesn't have to hold back on what he wants to say either, as does Judge Hyman. And my third guest is Daniel Russo. He's a certified specialist in criminal law. He's a defense attorney in Solano County. His firm is Martin and Russo. He's a member of the Criminal Law Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. So if you do have some questions, some comments, some concerns, please join us with those if you like. And let me, before we take our first call, just mention this. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association has its own lawyer referral service. You can call your own down there. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a Bar Association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during the normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone qualified to meet with you. A lawyer, of course, qualified to meet with you. And depending on the county, it may be a low of $25 or a high of $35 for a half an hour consultation. It's a great opportunity to learn something about your rights and obligations. Michael, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. I just have a few comments. The first would be that even to get one strike, it seems to me, the way defendants are often plead out to lesser offenses, especially when they're younger, makes a person that even gets one strike in California a criminal. And by the second strike, they've already been to jail, probably county or state prison, enough times that, to me, even two strikes is a bar too high. But having said that, my final comment is that we really know that drugs are the driving issue here. And maybe it's time that we legalize all drugs, not just marijuana, because until we get a handle on our drug problem, which to me is really a free choice thing more than anything else, I don't believe any government agency should tell me what I can put into my body. But until we get a handle on that problem, we're going to have a huge criminal justice system.
Let me get some comments for you, Michael, on this thing with respect to, of course, the drugs and your right to take drugs. Thank you very much for calling. And if you'll take the response on the radio, turn your radio back up. Jim, do you have some comments for him about his thoughts that legalize drugs?
Yes, I do. I am adamantly opposed to the legalization of drugs. I know that in November, the Proposition 19 will be on the ballot, the marijuana legalization, which, frankly, it's my understanding that the Chamber of Commerce is expressing concerns now because of what may take place in the workplace. People coming into work under the influence of drugs or marijuana, and there is basically immunity from any kind of sanctions for even if they're tested. So that is not going to improve the societal problems. I think that one of the worst things that ever occurred was the coining of the phrase, the war on drugs, because we should not be making war against our own people who have substance abuse problems. We should be trying to modify their behavior. And I am fully supportive of drug treatment programs and education. People who are sentenced to custody should be mandated to receive drug and alcohol treatment and education.
Do you have any difficulty with that, Dan?
No, I disagree about the marijuana. But I have a son who's coming into the practice, and I have told him that without drugs and alcohol, I'd have to get an honest job. That the 85 to 90% of the people involved in the system have alcohol and drug problems, and the grotesque truth is that the failure of the system to address alcohol and drug problems have created this. So I agree with Michael in the sense that it is the root of 99% of the problems, but I don't agree that the person who's already got one crime is a criminal, because in my life, in my practice, I've seen that to be something different, but someone's got to address those issues of rehabilitation.
Judge Hyman.
The only thing I would say to Michael is that there is such a thing as juvenile strikes. And here it depends upon the chief prosecutor in terms of what this person wants to do, whether or not this person wants to load up juveniles with as many strikes as is possible, because those are court trials in front of a judge without a jury. And it's very easy, should there be a prosecutor with an agenda, to go ahead and do something. While I agree with Mr. Fox that there's 58 counties, 58 elected district attorneys, and that the community elects the district attorney, I also feel very strongly that each prosecutor has a responsibility to do justice, even if the community wants to hang them high. Each prosecutor has a responsibility to do what is right, what is fair. And just because they can get a person for the most serious possible crime with the most serious possible consequences does not mean necessarily that that's in the interest of justice.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jim, did you have... Okay.
No, I was just going to say I agree wholeheartedly with what Judge Hyman just said, because the role of the prosecutor is to see that justice is done.
All right, here. This is your legal rights. If you'd like to call in with your comment, your question, your concern, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you've just tuned in, my guests are Dan Russo, a certified specialist in criminal law. He's a member of the Criminal Law Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. San Mateo County District Attorney James Fox and Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman. And Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi. Interesting discussion. There's two issues I'd like to bring up. One is when district attorneys and people in a courtroom assign people to 10 years, 4 years, 5 months in jail, I wonder if there would be it would be interesting to see if you would change the notion of what it is to put people in jail if the district attorney spent 2 weeks or a month in jail just for a practice. And once you've been in jail for a little bit of time, you have a little different idea about how to send up people for 10, 20 years. You might hiccup just once before you send somebody into jail for so much time. That's if you've experienced it directly. That's one. The other question I have is about the union. The lawyer brought up that the prison guards union who fund campaigns to keep more, to increase penalties for defendants? Is that the name of the union? That's a very interesting issue, and you sort of cut them off there. But would you explain a little more about that?
All right, if you take the answer on the air, Ron, thank you very much for calling. Go ahead, if you would, Dan Russo.
First of all, I don't want to cast aspersions on everyone who's in the union, because there are a lot of good folks and they work hard. But it's CCPOA. And what my problem is...
What does that stand for?
California Correctional Peace Officers Association.
Okay.
And they form... They put millions of dollars into not only into seeking more draconian results, in other words, harsher sentences, but they put money into certain victims' rights groups that push for longer sentences and mandatory sentencing. So that's what I try to explain as the wild card, because at this point in time, the push towards rehabilitation, and I agree with, you know, even though I consider myself pretty progressive, I agree with Mr. Fox that there should be mandatory drug and alcohol education for everyone, from the county jails to the juvenile halls to the prisons. But that's what's being pushed for. What's being pushed for is extension of three strikes, is more draconian sentencing, is larger prisons, more people in prisons, and less type of community solutions. And that's my problem with that.
Judge, did you have anything for Ron at all?
No, I don't.
Okay, all right. Our number is 1-415-841-4134. Claudia, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, fine, thank you.
Okay, so I just have a quick comment. Is there a concern about an age limit or an age, you know, an appropriate age to give these people a third strike? I mean, I've seen cases on TV that there's people that are in their 20s that have now are just done. So is there a concern with that, or am I just being too nice?
So in other words, are you saying, Claudia, does it make a difference if you're under 18 versus if you're over 18? Is that what you're saying?
Right, does it make a difference? And also, is there a valid concern for someone that is, for example, in their early 20s, that now it's going to be...
So in other words, rather than have him in prison for 25 years to life, is there some consideration that someone who may have made a mistake by committing, let's say, 3 strikes, to treat that person more liberally? Is that what you're saying? Because of his early age? Well, let me get some comments for you. I don't think that the law makes that distinction, but let me start. Judge, do you want to make a comment on that? Thank you. Take the answer on the air. Would you, Claudia, turn your radio back up? Thanks for calling.
No, the law doesn't make distinctions, and it depends upon what someone does. I mean, if a person's 18 and they shoot into an occupied car 4 times and there's 5 people there, personally, I'm not offended by prosecuting that person for 5 counts of attempted murder, and if that person's convicted, consecutive sentencing, because that was reckless behavior and, a community safety and the like. It depends. Those are extreme situations. I think that depending upon the crime, a lot of prosecutors do consider the person's age, and what they're looking for is not a lifetime commitment, but rather a commitment that's going to get the person out when they're in their 40s, perhaps, when the research indicates that the person is less likely to commit serious types of crime. And a lot of people age out of crime based upon a reduction in testosterone and other types of problems. Also, a lot of people in their 40s and 50s realize that it's time to get clean and sober. So, you know, it depends. But when they're doing very, very serious kinds of crime, I don't have a problem giving them serious consequences.
You know, Ron's first question was, how about the DA serving time in prison or jail for a few weeks to get a real taste for this? What comments do you have about that, Jim?
Well, actually, I probably have a different background than most of the elected district attorneys, because I worked my way through law school in the juvenile hall. So I am far more familiar with custodial
as a
counselor. and I also spent 9 years as a criminal defense attorney, so I've been on both sides. In terms of the question that Claudia just asked, though, relative to the age, if somebody is very young but does have two qualifying priors that occurred at the same time, that is something that we would take into consideration. Our county is fortunate in that we don't have that many three strikes cases, and we have a uniform approach. The decision whether or not to pursue a three strikes conviction is made by the three top managers in our office. So the two assistant district attorneys will evaluate it. If they're concerned, it goes to the chief deputy, and occasionally they come to me and ask what I think. There have been a number of times where we will request that the defense attorneys prepare a mitigation packet for the prosecutor to review. So we have all of the information prior to the resolution of the case. And hopefully it would be the same work that they would ultimately be doing for the judge. But again, my view is that we do attempt to see that justice is done. We want the information, and we don't want draconian sentences.
Judge Hyman, in light of Ron's question, I think he was very serious about this, that perhaps people who, you know, sit on benches as judges do, perhaps people who are district attorneys or deputy DAs really don't have the appreciation for the severity of someone serving 20 years, 25 years, et cetera. What comments do you have for Ron about that?
Well, I can only tell you that it weighs on me a great deal when I impose a long sentence. I'm cognizant of the fact that one does not do time in California safely, that when I send someone, if that person is weak in stature, that I worry about that person being sexually violated and being mistreated, and that the guards aren't always concerned about a person being able to do time safely, which is one of the other concerns. I'm also concerned about a person coming out worse than when they went in, which is why I think that there needs to be accountability for rehabilitation. Then if the person has had opportunities and has passed them by, then that's something else. But, you know, I have to follow the law to the best of my ability. There are things that I do that I just dislike enormously. And, you know, the prosecutor is the executive who determines the charges, and the judge has to deal with those as pled. And although the public seems to think that the judges are the shot callers, it isn't. It's the prosecutors that have all the power.
Do you agree with that, Jim? Do the prosecutors have all the power?
Well, the prosecutors certainly have the power to determine what charges will be filed and if convictions are obtained. However, as we've talked about before with the three strikes law, the judges have independent power to strike. So
over the objection of the district attorney.
And frankly, that happens frequently in San Mateo County.
Well, there's another problem that's not addressed, and that is that if a district attorney, and I have personal experience with this, overcharges a three strike case, in other words, has a case where the final strike is very weak factually, right? A very and I represented a client where the evidence was very, very weak, and the guy was 27 years old, and normally it would be the kind of case where we would just go to trial, and it would be unlikely to be able to make the
if there weren't the strikes.
Right,
you just go to trial.
Right,
yeah.
But I had to sit this guy's parents down and say, look, if we lose this trial, he's going for the rest of his life, and so your option is to plead to something, that can't be proven, and agree that, and they will agree, the district attorney will agree, allow to plead to an information without the strikes,
mm-hmm.
or go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it comes back to the individuals, and I do agree that in a lot of situations, I think judges have been made powerless because there's this myth that judges really just want to release all these maniacs out on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the reality, right? The reality is judges have narrow confines in which they must rule.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a failure of political will on the part of the DA's office, it's like ripples in a pond. It just multiplies.
Well, actually, and again, I'm just speaking from my own office's perspective, we have never attempted to utilize charging priors to leverage dispositions.
Mm-hmm.
We do not say, unless you plead guilty, we are going to seek 25 years to life. In fact, if we evaluate the case, believe that the defendant should not get 25 years to life, we will unilaterally strike the prior, and we will proceed as a two-strike case.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our jury trials have proceeded as two-strike cases when the defendant could have gone to trial as a three-striker.
But that's unusual. Is it not compared to some other counties?
I would hope it's not unusual because, in fact, that's what the law says,
mm-hmm.
that the three strikes law should not be used for plea bargaining purposes.
But, Judge, you were laughing at this. What do you say?
Well,
yes, you were.
As I said, Judge. As I said earlier, I have nothing but the utmost respect for Mr. Fox, because when the law came in, he said what he just said then. I mean, what mm-hmm. he just said now, he said then. I have seen situations in my county where I believe that there has been leveraging, and I've heard and have read where I think that occurs. Maybe it doesn't occur in San Mateo County, and I accept Mr. Fox at his word. It occurs in the 58 counties. I dare say, in my opinion, it occurs in more counties than not.
Okay. All right. James, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to point something out maybe to their honors and maybe just the listening audience, that in regard to drugs and imprisoning large numbers of people, I feel like this large prison population is having the unintended side effect of creating almost an alternative culture within our society, you know, a culture within our culture, a culture kind of formed and created by the prisons and the state. And with the black market in narcotics and drugs, I think this culture is being funded to a degree where it seems to me they're taking over countries. There was a civil war in Colombia. I've noticed the Mexican government doesn't seem to be controlling the northern part of their country. Drug cartels are. The Taliban, I hear, is getting their money from narcotics. And there's machine gun-toting lunatics chopping off people's heads right across the border. I was wondering whether their honors had thought about that when they were making their comments about effects of narcotics on our society. You know, I agree with them that drugs are a terrible scourge, but there must be some other way to deal with this issue besides, you know, feeding this monster.
Well, let me get some comments for you, James. Thank you very much for your call. If you take the comments on the air, turn your radio back up. And if you have a question, comment, or want to speak with my guests, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134 for Your Legal Rights. My guests are Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman, San Mateo County District Attorney James Fox, and criminal defense attorney Daniel Russo. And how about, who wants to respond first to what James was talking about, an alternative society? Dan Russo?
Well, I think it's an incredible point. People who are not familiar with the criminal justice system don't realize that we're building this behemoth, because it's not only these people who are serving in prison, but it's their families also. It's the children who don't have mothers and fathers who are directed towards or pushed further into poverty. I mean, right now we're spending $9.5 billion, according to the Department of Corrections, on corrections. I mean, it is a monster, and I think people are shutting their eyes to it. I mean, there has to be some a real politics, someone saying, look, this is not working. This is not a successful system. We have to address addiction and alcoholism in a real way. And it's like, it's kind of like the, you know, the frogs in the pot of cold water. Mm. You know, the budgets keep on going up. I noticed in a literature published in 2005 that it cost $26,000 a year to house an inmate.
2005.
That was only 5 years ago. So we've almost doubled what it costs to keep an inmate in prison. I mean, there's got to be some solutions other than just warehousing all these people, because a catastrophic, I mean, one of the things that I see when I, you know, I'm getting into my defense attorney paranoia, is that I live with not only defendants, the criminal defendants I represent, but I live with their families, their children, their parents, and everything else. And you see this catastrophic effect. It's not only the defendant's antisocial behavior that impacts everyone, but it's the inability to deal with alcohol and drugs that infects the whole system. And so until I hear a politician who is brave enough to get up there and say, you know, we need solutions, I just see it getting worse and worse. And the caller made a good point, because I don't recall in the 33 years of being a defense lawyer the level of violence and homicide coming out of Mexico. I don't recall it. You know, and the power of these drug cartels and the millions and millions of dollars. I mean, we've got to address it, you know, because it's like the Hydra. You can't just cut the head off one cartel. You know, they are supplying a need. And until we address the need, we're just, you know, well, they're keeping me employed, so I guess I shouldn't be too critical.
And frankly, I think that one of the problems, I certainly agree that the level of violence in Mexico is just out of control. And perhaps one of the reasons for that is, historically, there was not accountability and the level of corruption was so great. We, at least in the public safety community, never want something like that to occur here. And in Mexico, in the northern part of that country, over the last 4 years, 27,000 people have been murdered, many of them police officers with their heads cut off. So it is out of control, but we certainly have got an obligation to protect our society.
Well, let me address another issue. When we talk about how much it costs to incarcerate a person, we're not talking about how much it costs to remove children from families, place them into foster care, and then what percentage of those individuals wind up in the criminal justice system. We're not talking about the number of kids who don't graduate from high school, and there's a direct correlation between being illiterate and winding up in prison. We don't talk about a lot of things. I mean, in terms of my vision of a sane society, it would be that we would have the court would have partners, and the district attorney would be as concerned about probation doing its job correctly as the court is concerned about about probation doing its job. And unfortunately, in many communities, or many counties rather, the prosecutor does not speak ill of any other department head, whether it be the Department of Corrections, probation, the courts, or anyone else, because everyone has a budget. Other than the courts, it comes from the Board of Supervisors, and everyone's concerned about upsetting someone's pet or something of that nature. But in order for us to make a difference, in my opinion, it requires a collaboration with everyone, and that includes public defenders and defense attorneys, too, where there seems to be some research that ever since California has changed their credit situation in terms of county jails, that there's been a reduction.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because now you get 50% off unless it's a crime of violence.
Okay.
So that there's actually been, this is not true in Santa Clara County, I've been told, but in many counties there's been a reduction in the number of people that have gone Prop 36 in terms of drug rehabilitation, because they figure, well, gee, rather than being under the thumb for a year being tested and everything else, go ahead and give me my sins. I'm only going to do 50% of it, and then I'm going to go back out. I'm not going to change.
Yeah.
So, you know, but... And who knows how many defense attorneys, whether public defender or private, are doing a disservice to their clients in terms of saying, hey, look, you only have to do 50%, rather than saying, look, you really need to do Prop 36. You really need to get clean and sober, and you really need to straighten this out for your sake and for the sake of your families and your children. It's one thing to point out options that a person has. It's another thing to steer them in what is the right direction. And too many people feel that they have a responsibility to suggest the easiest way to get through the system.
Which in the long run, you're saying, is not the best way.
Exactly.
Let's take one more call. Roberta, if you have a brief question, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Roberta, are you there? Do we not have Roberta? What happened to her? Okay, all right. Pardon me. Her cell phone went dead. Okay, well, that's a shame. All right, we're sorry we missed you, Roberta. All right, we're coming to the end of the program. Would you, let me start with you, Dan, if you would take maybe half a minute, 45 seconds to kind of sum things up for people here.
Well, I think that, you know, three strikes is not a solution to anything. That there is a very limited population that three strikes is used effectively on. And for the vast majority, it's once again warehousing people and pandering to the worst instincts in the population. So, you know, my position, if anything, is there has to be some waking up to this monster that we're building here in California.
The monster of the prisons.
Right. Of just this gigantic system that takes all our assets, that takes $10 billion a year. And there has to be some political will for people. You know, people get so offended at entitlement programs and, you know, that we're doing this or doing that. But nobody, you don't get the rage, which the public should have, and saying we're just dumping $9.5 billion down a rat hole.
Let me get Judge Hyman to take about half a minute, 45 seconds, if you would.
My concern is that we need to have collaborations with everyone in terms of trying to change the system. I think that for some people, three strikes is certainly for many people, it's appropriate. There's a lot of violence, and people forfeit their freedom when they do heinous kinds of things or multiple molest things of that nature. Having said that, I think that there needs to be accountability with respect to rehabilitation, and that everyone has the responsibility to rehabilitate, not just the courts with drug courts and things of that nature.
Let me give Jim Fox 30 seconds.
Well, I think that at least in our county, the three strikes law has been properly implemented. We are firm believers in rehabilitation, and in fact, one of the first people who qualified for the three strikes law was somebody who got accepted into Delancey Street, which we believe in. We agreed that she plead to a 35-year determinate sentence, suspended. She graduated from Delancey after spending 3 years there. She's now a contractor with the Department of Corrections doing drug rehabilitation.
I want to thank the three of you for joining us. Great, great discussion. Thank you very much for your comments. My guests have been Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Eugene Hyman, San Mateo County District Attorney James Fox, and Criminal Defense Attorney, Certified Specialist in Criminal Law, Daniel Russo. Your Legal Rights production staff members, our program engineer, Debbie Kennedy. Thank you, Debbie, for being with us, and production assistant, Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estates section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. If you are having problems with legal problems, can't afford a lawyer, we're going to be talking about legal aid services for persons who can't afford an attorney. My guests will be representatives of Legal Aid of San Mateo County, Bay Area Legal Aid, and Community Legal Services in East Palo Alto. That's next week. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Chuck Finney.